California Wine Country with Dan Berger. Our guest today, the return of Clark Smith from Winesmith Wines. Pleasure to see you again. It's been too long. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Steve. You know, we got our barbershop chorus back up and running after the pandemic. Now we're
okay.
Got some great music.
And we need to talk about that because I want to get you guys back in.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Okay, cool. And Dan Berger, you okay? You had a little fall there a moment ago. We thought we lost one.
It was just a momentary hiatus.
He saw a 2017 Zinfandel, and he got up immediately and went, hell with this. I'm going to... We'll start with this, the cellar wine from Dan Berger.
Yeah, this is an interesting example. So, look, I started on the show in 2017.
Okay.
So we decided we would celebrate 2017 with a 2017 wine.
Okay, and I believe that's when the podcast started with Christy Mateo,
that's,
right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Well, now, keep in mind, we've been doing the wine show for 16 years.
Yeah.
And that was with Ben Pearson, and then Ben unfortunately passed. And then you came in 2017.
Right.
And
so I brought a 17 Ridge Vineyards Paso Robles Zinfandel. And it's a pretty concentrated wine, and it's nice, nice fruit still.
Oh, the fruit's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it's a Ridge. High quality producer. I don't have an awful lot of 17s in the cellar, but this was a good one. I figured we'll drink something like that. Most of the 17s that I have that are white wines, I was thinking about you, are unfortunately don't look very good. They're Chardonnays. They haven't aged all that. 7 years for a Chardonnay is a little.
That's
tricky.
A long time,
that's
man.
Too much time for most of those.
Yeah.
Things, so. But Clark brought some fascinating wines today, and that's much better. This will be fun just to sip on for a while.
Right. Well, it's delicious.
You know, I'm going to have to bring you my Faux Chablis. It's 100% Chardonnay from Napa College, and the current vintage is 2005.
Whoa.
The 06 isn't ready yet. So if you make Chardonnay right, it'll age quite a while.
Oh, quite man. Well. I've never heard that before.
It's true.
Somebody
it's
talking
true.
About a Chardonnay going, well, the 06 isn't ready yet.
Well, I've tasted Clark's Faux Chablis, and it's made like Chablis. It's made like a French wine. And it's stylistically identical to that style that you find in France. It doesn't have a lot of popularity here on the West Coast. Everybody likes California-style Chardonnays. But your wine would sell pretty well on the East Coast.
Well, it does.
Love that.
Clark Smith... A really cool dude, and we love having him on. It's been a long time. Let me quote the website, winesmithwines.com. Postmodern winemaking is the practical art of connecting the human soul to the soul of a place by rendering its grapes into liquid music. Our object is to deliver wines of classic balance and structural integrity, which develop soulful profundity and graceful longevity through sustainable farming in living soil and a skilled hand in the cellar.
All five of
okay,
those.
Okay, now, if you don't speak English, Dan will translate for you.
Okay. All five of those things you just said are playing at Hop Monk next week.
Well done, brother. Well done. All right, so, Clark, you got to explain this.
Well, I think if we hand around this Zinfandel of mine, it's in a very different style. It'll start to understand what I'm up to. I really don't like Zinfandels like the Ridge. I think they're too much alcohol, and they smell like raisins, and they don't age all that well.
They're smooth, though.
They are smooth.
That was smooth.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, my wine's...
Okay, and what year is this?
This is a 2021.
Okay.
And we call it Zinfandel Classico because it's made in a European style.
Oh.
And it's only 13.7 alcohol.
Now, I got to say, I like this better. As smooth as that sucker was, and it was really nice, this is more of, it's more of a Zin.
Yeah, it tastes like Zinfandel.
Yes,
it
does.
Instead of raisins, that's exactly it.
The Ridge is for people who want massive concentration alongside of good, solid fruit, but it's also 7 years old. Here's a wine that's only 3 years old, and bursting with varietal character and structure. And what you said earlier, you said something about structure when you read through Clark's website, and that's what this wine has. This wine goes great with food.
This is the wine that we used to make back in the early 70s, the Dever Vineyard and the Clos du Val. And this wine will go that kind of distance. This will go 30, 40 years when the wines like the Ridge, and that's certainly more restrained than a lot of them, but they just fall apart pretty quickly. Where this has got a lot of structural
integrity. Beautiful balance.
Talk about the music thing. Are you going to pick some stuff? We'll play it?
We're not set up to do it this time. It'll have to be next time around.
Oh, bummer.
But if you go to pairingwineandmusic.com, Dwight Furrow and I wrote a book about this called The Practical Art of Pairing Wine and Music. The book's only $10, but you don't even have to buy it. Just go to the playlists, and there's about 30 or 40 wine types there. So if you're having a Cabernet Sauvignon tonight, you click on that, and there's a free Spotify playlist of about 15 songs, and you just put that on your phone and have a nice dinner, and it'll enhance the flavor.
Can't you just pick one of your wines and throw out a couple songs?
Well, sure. Yeah, we could do this Cabernet Sauvignon. Be a good one to try. First, let's pour the wine around and talk about it a little bit. This is a Lake County Volcanic Soil 2013 cab with a 6 years in barrel and then a lot of development in the bottle.
6 years in barrel?
Yep. But I don't own any barrels that are less than 20 years old, so it's not an oaky wine.
No, it's not.
Can you throw out a song?
Let's do People Are Strange.
Ah, The Doors is his favorite.
See, because...
We can do that.
Cabernets are dark and angry.
Mm-hmm.
And music that pisses you off makes them... round and sweet.
Okay, while he's queuing up People Are Strange, explain your history again and how you got into the wine world, and then we'll get into more of about pairing rock songs with wine.
Well, basically, I'm a MIT dropout from the 60s and wandered out to California, got a job in a liquor store. And at that time, there were only about 250 wineries in the United States back then. Now we have over 12,000. And I just kind of got in on the ground floor. What do you think was the average alcohol of a California wine in 1960?
Probably pretty heavy.
It was heavy. It was 18.5.
We weren't
making anything but port and sherry.
Yeah, okay.
But by 1970, the average alcohol was 11% because everybody wanted to make Blue Nun knockoffs, Leapfrog milk, and it changed the industry completely.
In the 70s,
see, we did.
My first wine experience was Matus.
I love that stuff. And today, it's still a really good wine.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know they still make it.
They do, and it's better than ever.
Wow.
And it's only about $5.
Still a little too sweet for me, but you know what.
No,
I know.
Not anymore.
Right.
What I was trying to tell you is that winemakers didn't know anything about making table wine. So in the 70s, when I was selling wine, it really was mostly crap. I would say half of the wines that were made at that time, you wouldn't be able to sell today at all. But we've cleaned up our act quite a bit.
Right.
So do we have The Doors?
Yeah, we do.
Fire away.
Okay, Clark Smith from Winesmith Wines, pairing wines and rock music, and he says this particular 2013 cab goes best with this song. Stay tuned, everybody.
When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
All right, yeah. Okay, we're actually on California Wine Country, pairing rock and roll songs with wines with Clark Smith from Winesmith Wines.
The idea here, now you've seen that this dark, angry music makes Cabernet round and sweet, because Cabernet is kind of a dark, angry wine.
Yeah.
So let's put on something cheerful, and I guarantee you it'll ruin the wine.
Okay, the Beer Barrel Polka. This is a 2013 cab.
Yeah.
When I first tasted it, I fell in love with it. But I got to say, when The Doors song played, I liked it even more. Now, what's the scientific thing behind how you guys put this together?
Well, everybody knows that pieces of music have some sort of emotional modality.
Of course.
You have happy songs and angry songs and sexy songs and romantic songs. Well, wines are like that, too. Wine is literally liquid music. And if you just match up the mood of the wine with the mood of the music, then it really enhances the flavor of it.
God, I love this. We need to keep giving out the website.
Pairingwineandmusic.com. Just click on the playlists. There's about 30 or 40 free Spotify playlists.
The song that we played enhanced this 2013 Cabernet.
Right. Now we're going to ruin it.
All right, let's ruin it.
I'm so confused. Do I ask the wine how it feels?
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out.
That totally ruined this 2013 Cabernet.
Music?
I mean, come on,
sure,
man. Pardon me?
I'm not sure that's music.
Oh, it was at some point.
Well, actually, excellent with White Zinfandel.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I didn't dream this up. It was one of my colleagues, Don Blackburn, who we were both consultants for the Benziger family,
right,
back in the early 90s. And we used to go out in the woods and think deep thoughts and press the envelope and think outside the box and all that. Bruce Rector called
it Mr. Cliche
Quality
now,
Symposium,
right.
Yeah. And we would, you know, we were a couple of the in-house weirdos, and he's the one that demonstrated this for me.
On your website, again, winesmithwines.com, it says, and I quote, "We aspire to explore traditional traditions beyond the mainstream, such as sulfite free winemaking and experimental winemaking techniques, as well as applying European aesthetics in the new world."
This is a real good example of that.
Okay, hold
this
on.
This next wine is a Norton. So that's not a Vitis vinifera. It's not from Europe. They found it in the woods in Virginia in 1820. And we make the only one in California, but there are actually about 500 Nortons.
Norton.
All over the country. It was this guy, Dr. Norton, that found the seedling.
So what is this close to? It's another red.
I think it's a little like a Rhone. It's very rich and round. Kind of smells like blueberry pie, you know. But it's dry.
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
have any sugar, but
no.
Very rich.
Dan?
Norton is very popular in Missouri and Virginia.
Really?
Yeah, those are the two states that grow Norton.
It's actually the state grape of Missouri.
Yeah.
The Norton grape?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it named after Jackie Gleason's partner on the Honeymooners?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Dr. Norton named it after his daughter, Cynthia, and so the other name for it is Cynthiana. But after he died, they kind of switched the name back. So you'll see Cynthiana
and Norton
grape.
Do we grow Norton grapes in Sonoma County?
There's a place in Clarksburg called the Herringer family, and we grew this there. They figured out they weren't growing it right, and they pulled it out in 2020, and so we're waiting for those vineyards to come back.
Wow.
And in the meantime, we've got a 2022 from a client I have in Kansas City called Terravox, and it's spectacular.
What would what song would we you know?
I knew you'd ask me that.
Yeah, of course you did.
Well, this is a much more positive vibe to it. So I'd be going for, well, let's try something here. Find the Bing Crosby version of "Moonlight Becomes You."
Anyway, he'll go for it. "Moonlight Becomes You."
You have all these new small mom and pop wineries.
Sure.
Back in my dad's day, you'd talk about retiring to the chicken ranch. But now it's a little winery.
Right,
and
right.
These guys have no idea how much trouble they're in. So I try to throw them a rope. I've done 64 vintages now, and I've made pretty much all the mistakes there are to make. And so I do a lot of consulting that way. And I have a class called Winemaking Fundamentals Made
right.
Easy. That's basically takes a four-year Davis degree and boils it down to a weekend. Winesmith makes wine from about 12 different vineyards all over
right,
California,
okay.
And one from Kansas City. But my clients, I have about 120 wineries that I coach, and they're all over the place. There's one in South Africa that does an organic Cabernet. And these guys in Kansas City the tip, southern tip of New Jersey. There's a wonderful winery there called Hawk Haven, and just spread out all over.
Wow.
I can say one thing is when I get together with Clark for lunch, there's no way you can ever understand the wines he brings. He serves them blind to me, and my rate of guessing them is about 1%.
You, 1%, Dan Berger?
Well, he throws me a few curves.
Of course he does. Of course he does.
I give him grapes he's never heard of. Here, give him some more Norton, and we'll see whether my guess is right.
The song?
It's called Moonlight Becomes You.
Okay.
This is something I used to court my wife.
Bing Crosby, Moonlight Becomes You.
Moonlight becomes you. It goes with your hair. You certainly know the right thing.
A little Bing Crosby with this Norton wine. It's Clark Smith from Winesmith Wines, and the pairing of wines and music is such a cool thing, dude.
Clark's history goes all the way back in the industry, and he one of the first people to really identify the fact that sub-regional characteristics in wine were critical if you were going to make wine that illustrated what the variety did in a particular plot of soil. And you were, and still are, I guess, involved with Appalachian America, which is not exactly still a thing, but it sort of is a thing.
It's on life support, but...
explain what that is.
Go for it.
Or was.
Well, there was a guy named Roger Dial in Nova Scotia, of all places.
Wow.
And he got it into his head that he wanted to build a website that would tell the story of every winery and every appellation in the U.S. and Canada.
Good so
he
grief.
Built, he talked this local fishing magnate, Tom Welch, who was a philanthropist. I talked him into giving him $4.5 million to build the site. And I heard about it from Dan.
Dan, do you know this guy?
Yeah. Well,
can you talk him into giving me $5 million just for hanging with you?
He was a regional, Dan was a regional correspondent.
Wow.
Back then.
Oh, for AP?
No. This was for Appalachian America. They started this.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted me to do Sonoma County. And I said, gotcha. I'll be happy to do. So I was the guy who covered Sonoma County. Then eventually they said, well, that's too much for you. Why don't you just concentrate on Russian River Valley? So I concentrated for four
and
years.
And then they ultimately said, why don't you just go hang with Steve and drink wine?
That was the best gig I ever got.
Chris, Clark?
Yes. Well, then what happened was Tom got tired of it. We never could commercialize the site. It was way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, we're talking about a 30,000-page website that at the time had every winery in the United States and Canada on it, and a whole bunch of articles by Dan and about 25 other regional correspondents. And I got put in charge of the Best of Appalachian tasting panel with Dick Peterson and Dan and some other people, Rick Jones. And then in the end of 2010, Tom decided to pull the plug, and so they were going to just shut the site down. And it said, you can't shut this down. This is an amazing site. Nobody will ever do anything like this again. And so they sold it to me for $10.
He had to borrow the money from me.
Yeah. And I've just been trying to keep it alive since then and find a buyer.
That is so amazing, Clark.
Well, the site still exists, and it's very interesting to read through some of those articles in particular because those articles are still valid.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that the wine industry does change a lot, but what doesn't change is viticulture. When the grapes are put in the ground, they
exactly.
stay for 30, 40 years.
Right.
And
right.
so those that regional characteristic that he was talking about, that Clark continues to talk about, is all about how each region produces these things almost irrespective of which grapes you put in the soil. Now, if you put the wrong grape in a particular soil, you're going to get a strange wine. But if you put the right grape in, you're going to get a better wine.
Now, for example, Russian River Pinot, everybody knows, has a black cherry aroma to it. But you know what? The Petit Syrahs that you grow there have that same black cherry character. And so that's a lot of what we did, was identifying the flavor profiles for the signature varieties. So, for example, Paso Robles, you smelled it in the Zinfandel, you'll also smell it in the Cabernet and the Petit Syrah, has a kind of a Tootsie Roll character to it, you know, orange peel and cocoa.
What I like about the site is that it is fairly specific. It's not vague. It goes into some detail. Now, some of it may be really, some of the articles are really long, and it goes into some detail that maybe some people won't be interested in, but a lot of it is groundbreaking. When we started this whole project, what, 15 years ago, 14 years ago, whatever it was, nobody was talking about this. It was really novel. Everybody was talking about how good the wines are. Clark and I were really looking at soils.
We are building a tasting room up in Apple Hill. So
where the hell's Apple Hill? I haven't.
It's an amazing phenomenon. It's,
is that
it's
Mendocino
up,
County?
It's up the hill from Placerville, up in
wow.
the foothills.
Gold country.
And Lord knows why, but people come from all over the world to go to Apple Hill and buy apple pie. And there's thousands of people that descend on that in the fall. And so we're going to have our tasting
I'm going
room
out there in 2 weeks to be a judge at a wine competition. I adore driving out to the Sierra foothills. It takes about 4.5 hours to get there. But it's fabulous to go out there, because then you can try really legitimate old-style California wines. A lot of Barbera out there. You've got some old-style Carignan. And these are fabulous wines. And today's buyer is wondering whether they should spend $200 for a bottle of Napa Cabernet. Well, if you've got the money, sure, go for it.
But those are the cheap ones.
Those are the cheapies, yeah. But if you're really interested in wine, look at what Clark has been doing. These wines are reasonably priced, and especially now, the one you've got in your glass, Steve, this is a Petit Verdot, and it's like no other Petit Verdot that I know. Most of them are pitch black, they're 15% alcohol, they're concentrated, they're tannic. This stuff is 13.5 alcohol. It's
really
graceful. Yeah.
It's not tannic at all. And
no.
It was.
At some point.
But this is, one of the reasons it is the way it is I employ a technique that I learned in France called micro-oxygenation, just kind of soften and round the tannins and lead to longevity. But the reason I wanted to pour this is that this is the future. In Bordeaux, for example, that's the grape everybody is planting. Now, when it's, if you can't get it ripe, Petit Verdot is kind of clumsy and stupid.
That sounds like this radio show.
Yeah. Even at a couple of a percent.
I am clumsy and stupid. Okay, you know that.
Even at a couple of percent, it can take over the wine. But if you can get it ripe, which, of course, is easier and easier to do as the summers get warmer. This is the primary grape that they're planting in Bordeaux now because of climate change. And I think this one is a great example of that standalone Petit Verdot that you almost never see, but you'll be seeing more and more of it.
It is lovely, Dan. Tell me why I like this.
Well, I think, first of all, number one is delicious. I mean, it's a good, solid red wine. It needs food, but sitting in the studio like this, you can still drink it because the tannins are not aggressive. The acid is perfect for the structure of the wine. The aromatics are beautiful. It's got a little bit more, so that where the Norton has the real cooked blueberry component, this has a delicate, fresh blueberry component.
Yes.
And I like that.
No, and I agree. This is much more delicate than the Norton. Mm-hmm. I adored the Norton.
This is probably a wine that if you buy a bottle of it, you could drink it tonight. But, boy, I would imagine what you would do with a second or third bottle and stick it in the cellar for another few years. This is a really delicious wine.
And I would say that the Norton is delicious, but this wine is profound. It's got a lot of complexity.
I love that, dude.
On it. You know what I'm saying?
Delicious, but this is profound. Yeah,
Norton,
okay.
Norton is like a popular song, and this is more like, you know, something from
This is
Tchaikovsky.
Deep stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it has a lot of depth to it.
Clark is the only person who could take a Christmas wine and turn it into a swimming pool wine.
Oh, yeah.
That's another story in itself.
Oh, that's one we need to hear.
Chateau St. Nicholas.
You want to tell that story?
Well,
please do, Clark.
We had Chenin Blanc coming out of our ears, and I really like Chenin Blanc, but, you know, it wasn't all that popular. So what we did is we stuck a little red Zinfandel into it, which on the label we called white Zinfandel, to give it some pink color and a little bit of Symphony, which is a Muscat aromatic. And then we put Santa Claus on the label, and the cork said, ho, ho, ho. Except if you turn it upside down, it says, oi, oi, oi. So it's for Hanukkah, too. And anyway, we sold about 100,000 cases of that in the month of November. But then we had a little left over. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, there was a little of this Christmas wine that was left over.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas,
but
everyone.
It still said ho, ho, ho on the cork. So the Wine Spectator found out about it. Norm Roby wrote it up, and he said, you know, this poolside blush that they're selling in Minnesota is really Chateau St. Nicholas. And so...
So the Christmas wine became a pool wine.
Yeah. For you know, for people with cabin fever up in Minnesota in February.
Clark's next project is to do ancient music. He's going to find some ancient music, and then he's going to make a wine that goes with it.
It's great for me to come on these, because I'm just finding out about this myself. Yeah. I'll definitely have to come back and find out what else I'm up to.
Most people that come
Gregorian chants. Perfect for you. You didn't talk about the barbershop quartet he runs.
The Redwood Quartet.
Yeah. How soon can we do that?
Pretty soon.
Well, please get that together, because I've had you guys on the show 6-7 times.
Yeah, that's true.
Dan?
My father was a barbershop singer.
Well, you were too.
And I was as well, yeah.
Is that why your hair looks so bad?
Thank you very much. I just got this for you. This haircut is just because of you. I was concerned about my appearance across this.
Oh, yeah, look at mine.
Yeah, just get a hat.
I have to wear a hat because my hair is so screwed up.
My father's barbershop quartet was called the Astronauts.
I like that.
My dad came up with the name.
The Astro?
Astronauts.
Okay. So I just love the idea of postmodern winemaking.
Yeah.
Expound on that just a bit. We already did, but it's much later in the day.
Well, in 2013, I wrote a book called Postmodern Winemaking.
Right on.
Basically, it's about everything they taught me in school at Davis that just ain't so.
And you can get the book by going to winesmithwines.com, click on Postmodern Winemaking. It's an amazing book. He's an amazing dude. We're going to get you back in with the boys so you can all sing. And then we want to get you back and set it up to do more music and wine pairing.
Great. Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to see you, man.
And
have you on the show.